This show is not for the easily offended. So if you are easily offended, go listen to something else.
Welcome, everybody, to Indie Comic Book Noise, episode 352. It's been a few weeks, but we're all back. Got some good comics to talk about. Right, guys?
Or bad ones.
Ooh. Sorry to hear.
That's going to bring us down.
Talking about Kevin's.
Okay. That makes sense then.
That's right. We've got Steve Raker and Kevin Whirlwind X and Andrew the LA Rabbit and Phil. It's the U.S. versus Canada in the comic book world arena.
Well, I hear you have fake Thanksgiving coming up.
Speaking of holidays, one thing I wanted to offer up is an idea I have executed almost to perfection, so I thought I would share with you guys. And that's and this time of year, thinking of gifts and stuff, and people are always asking, you know.
Oh, you got us gifts?
No, but what can they get you? Like, your family asks you, what can they get you, you know? And it's like, I don't know, I buy everything I want for myself kind of thing. But
gift card.
The kind of thing you wouldn't buy for yourself, maybe, necessarily, or wouldn't think of, just because of the expense or whatever. But, you know, getting, like, sketchbooks or prints from, like, some of your favorite artists from their websites. Now's the time where artists have their San Diego Comic-Con sketchbooks and thing, their new sketchbooks from the year now on sale through their websites. Just recently, I got some sketchbooks from Jim Belent, from the Tarot Witch stuff. I got another spiral-bound Rough Stuff sketchbook from J. Scott Campbell. That's really nice. Have you seen his Rough Stuff ones? He's got like three of them, and they're spiral bound, and they open either vertically or horizontally, and so it actually kind of looks like a sketchbook, the way the images bleed over onto the other pages and stuff. Really nice. And just today I got in the mail three sketchbooks from Art Adams. They send them signed usually from the artist's websites, and it's just one of those things. They're usually 20 to 30 bucks a pop. They're con sketchbooks, basically. And, again, it's the kind of thing that you might not think to have on your order list or your wish list, but it's awful nice little gem when you have it sitting there in your hand and are paging through it. Especially the Art Adams ones are full size. Excellent. Really cool. You know, like magazine size. Love that stuff.
That sounds cool. I picked up some of those kind of crazy things at cons and stuff, but yeah.
Oh, I love getting them at cons.
Yeah.
But again, it's just this is the time of year where you might have people looking to drop a couple of bucks your way or something, and that's a nice thing that you might not otherwise think to buy for yourself in the off season per se.
And you're not going to run into everyone, so yeah,
it's true. Break the inertia, Phil.
Sure.
It was a good thing we didn't record earlier in the week.
What is that?
You know, sometimes you're reading things online and then something sets you off, so you're like, oh, good thing we didn't record like last Friday or something.
I think first off, we're going to talk about, to put Kevin on the spot, Tooth and Claw.
Oh, are we?
Yeah. But it's Busick's new comic and drawn by Benjamin Dewey, who I have no clue. But it's, how would you explain this, Kevin?
We got colors by Jordy Belair as well.
Yes. Oh, you read it too?
Yeah, I picked it up.
Could you explain the premise? Because I don't think I'd do it justice.
How would I? Final Fantasy with animals.
Whoa. Huh?
Done. Done.
Who publishes this?
Image.
Okay. Image.
And is it Claw with a K?
No.
Thank you. Thank you, Kurt Busiek.
I don't think he can. Marvel owns all the claws.
Well, what about the claw?
It's like a post-apocalyptic, anthropomorphic, agrarian society with magic.
I didn't even think of it that way. Post-apocalyptic. I didn't even think of that.
Well, that's a kind of giving away what happens in the story, but I wouldn't say it is at the beginning.
I would say it is because the references that the praying dog makes to all the departments, the housing and urban development, health, education, welfare, wildlife, fisheries, homeland security, and they talk about the crappy old days before the one hero unleashed magic in the world. I mean,
so it kind of makes me think that is our world right now a post-apocalyptic type of scenario, like the beginning of the story?
No, it makes sense to me what Andrew says. It's just
I just didn't think about that. I thought about like your typical Final Fantasy story where you had something happened in the past that brought magic to the world. Then they did all this like great stuff, and then something goes wrong. Like that pretty much describes a lot of the Japanese role playing games and all that. I don't know. Maybe because I played so many of those games back in the day, like, when I see a story like this, I'm just like, I don't know, just, same thing with the, like, the whole Chrono Trigger game, like, they have the, you had the frog guy, I don't remember what his name is, and you had, like, the robotic guy, and then, like, maybe a cave woman, I don't know, it just, it seemed very much, because those are my reference points. So
I don't know what I read anymore.
I want to hang out at your house.
That's what sticks out to me. It's like those types of things, and then like the whole like real world elements, like where you kind of wonder if it's like or not even real world, but it's sort of related, like environmental stuff. Like you could say modern day, or like even like Star Trek, where they're like, oh, who knew that like something we were using is messing stuff up.
If we only knew.
I know. The other thing is like a Lord of the Rings type of thing, like the double page splash, where it more looks like an illustrated book. And then you run into like the crazy racism or something, where they're like, this is how the world is. And then they're trying to teach a kid, and the kid's like, I think I understand, Father, what's going on. And you're just like, oof.
Yeah, so that was... It was the references to all the United States departments that threw me to okay, this is going to be... Well, way before we get to the bit about finding out about that old champion who unleashed magic on the world, I didn't know what Idente... It's going to be something, and when we find it, we're going to be mad at ourselves because it's going to be some silly pun or something.
So that's who you think it is when they showed, like... The origin stuff that's all in green in the flashback, right?
Yes. Well, I mean, otherwise, why would they pick such peculiarly specific names that happen to mention, that happen to exactly mimic the same departments that we have in our, you know, in the United States. I mean, you guys wouldn't pick it up because you're Canadian.
No.
Unfamiliar with America. Yeah. But basically... Like, in the executive branch, he has advisors, what you guys would say ministers. And in our instance, you know, the different departments have these peculiar names like Homeland Security, Wildlife and Fisheries, Housing and Urban Development, Health, Education, and Welfare. And so that's what tipped it off. I mean, you must have the ministerial equivalents in your executive branch.
You mean... I don't know about executive branch, but there's certainly ministers of, like, finance or like, northern development and mines and stuff like that.
Right. So if in your... And if the Canadian, if Busick had been Canadian, it would have been those, you know,
Sweet.
Northern development and trees and beaver protection and all the other more Canadian-specific issues. I kind of wish they hadn't done the flashback.
Why is that?
With... What appears to be the human torso to the thing? I mean, they obscure the face, but clearly it's not one of these other types of...
Oh, things. Yeah, I see what you mean, yeah.
That sort of ruined the...
I think I assumed it was a lion.
Yeah, that would be...
Because of the mane.
Hmm.
But basically, so to more clarify the story... They're in this society where I'm going to say it's probably Renaissance level, but with active magic.
It's not like Final Fantasy industrial steampunk era, like 1900s maybe, but they have flying ships and everything?
I would say not, only because we don't see any mechanized creation.
Yeah. It's all magic.
By magic. Yeah. Most of the technology seems to be very very primitive. That's why I was putting more Renaissance. Also, the garb that the higher up ministers wear look very, very that time period as well. Not that I'm being very specific. Renaissance 250 years or something.
So, you're the history buff.
Showing
take your word.
Again. But basically, so we find out there's basically a societal hierarchy with these magic heavy cities that sort of rule the people in these floating cities that rule the people and demand tribute. But the magic is ebbing. And that's where you find out the history that there was a time before magic. And one of the wizards has this plan to restore all the magic by going back and finding this one champion who you see in a flashback, who I would suggest looks a lot more human than most of these creatures do, which kind of bummed me out. And I hope we don't get any humans.
I'm pretty sure. I bet you it's going to be a lion.
Maybe, just seems like all the other creatures have very creature, like they're.
It has no nipples.
So it can't nurture you.
No, aren't those darkened little knobs nipples on it, Phil?
But wouldn't they be off center then?
There's two, like, and if
I
you
thought
look
that at, too, but there's. Yeah, how
many
I guess there's
how many issues of this
nipples.
Are there?
One.
Okay.
Yeah, we may need you to weigh in on the nipple.
Concept. Yeah. We're looking for porn last episode, I believe, weren't you?
So
not this hard.
So, and then basically so the wizards are going to try this thing to see if it will work. And accuse me of spoiling it. I was spoiled. Preview on Comic Book Resources was right after the climax of the book.
Are you serious? Yeah.
I don't know if you saw that, but I thought it was the worst pages to choose for the mm-hmm. preview of it, from a storytelling standpoint.
I think I might have saw the same pages in previews because I remember like going, oh, I want to get into a new Busick book. Like, I love his stuff from back in the day, but I haven't read a lot of it, his stuff in like recent years. And then I'm like, well, that sounds like an awesome story, and, you know, the creators and everything. And then, like, the preview pages were, like, some dark and grim thing, and then I was like, I hope this isn't how the book was. But then you get the book, and, like, it's awesome and everything. So, yeah, those pages I probably saw were probably from, like, the end of the story. And, that was the least interesting part.
That's the part I like the most.
Not only is it least interesting, when you start reading the book, you quickly realize, oh, I think I know how this is going to work out.
Exactly. But I, like, loved all the world building and all the crazy creatures and everything. I'm like, wow, that's way more exciting than, like, some characters, like, crying and going, it's, like, the end of the world.
But you're going to get that again. It's just now it's somewhere else.
Yeah, we just needed to get there. You need to introduce all the cool stuff and all that stuff. Like, if it would have started at the back first, I would have been like, oh, because we didn't really earn that.
I happen to think that the art and color does an admirable job. These creatures are very well, you know, very distinct, and they do look like bipedal humans. But still, you can tell what animal they are. So there's no failing on that regard. I don't know. Anthropomorphism is always a risky game.
For me, yeah, I'm not always into it.
Because, as Kevin pointed out earlier, it leaves you open to some less than subtle metaphors.
Mm-hmm.
And upon closer examination, it doesn't really work. And also, you have to kind of lay down these rules. Can the dog people, you know, produce viable offspring with the owl people? And, you know, are they really separate species? Are they all related? All these kind of weird questions that make mapping it to humans.
I had that question, actually, about the dog and the owl. I did think of that.
If you're going to make that like a metaphor, well, it's not really the same because mm-hmm. all people can interbreed. Newsflash.
Oh, yeah, I was thinking. Like,
you hardcore racists out there who don't
think that. No way a dog can fuck an owl. Well, maybe. Okay, I see it.
But you know what I mean. But then that creates a problem if you want to say something about different types of people.
Yeah.
We're not really different species, like I said, not to break it to all the our hardcore racist continue.
Well, they turned off their iPod by now. They're like, whoa.
But so and again, and it just leaves some more. It can held not subtly, but from a visual standpoint, it's very dynamic because it's you have these cool sort of anthropomorphized creatures, and like the dog guy looks really good. He looks like a little, I think that's a pit bull, but I'm no expert on dogs.
I think so, yeah.
And yeah, I just thought it was really strong. Although the back few pages, they just leave it with that green glow, which I was kind of subtracted a little bit from the overall impact, I thought. But all in all, I don't know. I'm a bit concerned about where he's going with this. Kevin, Bill?
I'm fascinated. I really want to see where it's going, even though it kind of changed towards the end. And the coloring was just phenomenal.
I was not going to lie. Like, I liked it, but I was getting kind of bored. I was reading through it. But then when I found out what the payoff was at the end, it got me wanting to try the next issue for sure. I kind of liked the last page, too, where it's him trying to wrangle in the team to do the comic book. Did you guys read that part?
Where they're portrayed as like animals? All animals, the critters.
Yeah, I kind of like that part. It was kind of funny.
Yeah. And it was 48 pages for $3.
Yeah, no ads.
Yeah.
And once again, Image does good. I love their number ones with no ads.
Yeah, it's really, you get a lot here with the shift. So they've been a lot of time. I got to say, my favorite are probably the bison or buffalo people.
Yeah, I meant to mention them. Yeah. I guess they're kind of like the Indians, Native Americans of the comic.
Yeah, they're just very, that has that sense of size. I mean, not that I've seen live ones, but you go in the museum and they have the stuffed ones. And it's always so breathtaking when you stand next to it and realize just how physically imposing those, when you
balls think of are them
right. Wandering the plains of North America. But
of course, I gotta say the owl guy or the frog guy because of Chrono Trigger. Like the frog guy, if he's wielding a sword, I'm like, oh yeah.
So you guys said you are gonna get the rest? Like you are gonna?
Yeah, I already pre-ordered the 2 and 3 probably.
Andrew, I imagine you're going trade.
Yeah, I'm a little. I mean, obviously, the lack of a prominent role for any rabbit-based anthropomorphized creature is a real blow against the book. Not gonna lie. I mean, there is at least one cameo in the wizard circle, but I need a little bit something more, if you're going to try and get me back in the loop here.
Yeah, I'm going to give it the next issue and then see what happens.
The frog guy? Boy, he doesn't have much of a role in this game.
Yeah, I don't remember a frog guy at all.
If you flip to the page that has the staples on it, the frog guy is right there when they're getting
yeah, I see him.
Different guys together, and I'm like, yeah, he's pretty awesome.
Yeah, but he's got, literally a panel.
Well, how much did your rabbit guy get?
That's my complaint.
That's why he's not getting it.
I do see it, like I said, in the wizard circle. That's a, the full page splash, at least.
we only saw part of this world. So when the world needs a hero to build it back up again, a rabbit guy will come in and, bring everyone together and make a new world and be the leader.
Or it will be the red shirt.
I mean, I'm just saying that when, we had the World's End, another anthropomorphic book recently, and, that one did it right. Steve, what have you got now that we've
brought Save us, Steve.
Yeah.
Any of you guys read Secret Skull from 2004?
I did, but I read it in 2004, so I don't remember much. But I remember loving the art, I believe.
Me too. It is from IDW, and it's 4 issues long, Secret Skull, and it is written by Steve Niles with art by Chuck Beebe, just 2 capital Bs.
You mean the black metal guy? Wasn't that him?
I wouldn't know. The art is kind of Mignola, Guy Davis-y, kind of mixed with, Tradmore. Like, there's, really expressive motion and stretching and that kind of stuff going on. But really fantastic. I sent you guys a couple of images of some action pages sequences to give you guys an idea of what it looks like, which I'll also post on our Facebook page and all that good stuff. But the idea is it's like a pulp-type series. The Secret Skull is a pulp-like character. Great visual with the skull face and everything. And there's a whole thing of the skull being chased by a detective because he's like a vigilante at night kind of thing. And it turns out that he, the Secret Skull, is actually a she and is actually the detective's daughter. So she's like living these dual lives of being right under the nose of the person who's hunting her. In her other guise, and her fiance is on the squad and on her father's team, and he knows. So you're kind of, that's one of the story beats, that little spoiler there. But she ends up getting chased down by various undead that are in the vicinity in the area, and they are trying to convince her that she's actually one of them, and part of the deal is that they all keep mom, that they keep a low profile, and if she keeps making news of herself running around being a vigilante, then there's going to be a problem and they're going to have to take her down. And she's not convinced that she's dead, and but you were bit by an undead once and all this sort of business, and her history comes to light and she has to come to terms with that. But the problem is she can't keep a low profile because she gets these prophetic visions, and one of them is her dad taking a bullet to the head, and she's out to take down this crime family to prevent that from happening and beat the clock of the undead deciding that she's gone one step too far and that they've got to put her down. So that's kind of neat. She's kind of fighting them off and trying to get to the guy who's going to kill her dad before he does. And meanwhile, protect her secret, keep it a secret if she can along the way. So it's got lots of good ups and downs to it. It's definitely one complete story in the four issues. I read it on digitally on Comixology, and I really enjoyed it. I bought it just because what the art looked like on the covers, and that is a really good indication of what the art's like on the inside, and was definitely well worth the ride.
I might have to get it digitally.
It looks great digitally, too, with the backlit on the iPad. I gotta say.
Or Android.
or Zoom.
Andrew, what's up?
Well, I think Phil and I were talking about Tag Team and Copperhead, because I always like to find out about new books, and I heard it mentioned on a podcast about indie comic books by some Canadian guy named Phil.
I mentioned it to you because I met someone you really like too, Jay Faber, who did Noble Causes, which we're both big fans of. What's his name? I tried, okay?
He was supposed to be the easy one.
No, I told you, they were all hard. The next one, Gliski? What's that?
Interesting.
So I
let you down, Andrew.
It's an Image comic book, and we're on. We have the first two issues, or at least I have the first two issues. I don't know if the third one's come out yet. I'm always behind the time with
the store.
And it's a space western. And what's odd is I am not what you would call a fan of western literature, comics, movies, prints, theme, tapestries, or any of the other related genre that is influenced by that. But I think that in this instance, it's enough of a compelling scenario that I like it. I don't know if it's the space elements or what, but I'm on board. What we have is we have a sheriff relocating to some hillbilly town, well, in this case, a planet, but out to some mining town, some sheriff with some sort of mysterious past, and her little boy. And they're going to some troubled town, so they're walking into the middle of, you know, there's the rambunctious locals, there's the guy that owns the town, there's all the sort of tropes of the western, but because I don't spend a lot of time in it, it still has some amount of freshness to me. Phil, are you a western guy in general.
I am a Western fan. Yeah, I love Western, and my favorite is when they mix it with space stuff. So
okay, but am I correct in that these are some recognized tropes of the Western genre?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, but for me, they came off just fine. I have no complaint with that. I don't know if someone you're more familiar, so it might be a little more tired. But I thought it was interesting, compelling.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
No, I thought it was awesome. It was I think it's nothing new. It's definitely something I've seen a million times before, but it's just the way the guy who meets them when they first land. I don't know his name, but he's the deputy, I guess. Just like he seems angry with her, and I kind of like the mystery behind him. Like, is he like you don't really know if he's a bad guy or
he's the guy that was running the town and presumably thought he's next in line to be the sheriff, and so he gets passed over for this new person. So there's going to be some sort of resentment, but whether he's a bad guy or not, we don't know. Go on.
Mm-hmm. And then just there's some really cool stuff going on with her son because it's a new strange place. Him kind of going off on his own and exploring and getting into a bit of trouble. I thought it was they went into a character that I thought was interesting.
Yeah, there's some sort of backstory where sort of AI robot types are second class citizens, and our sheriff has some particular history, maybe not unlike Ripley from Aliens.
Maybe like there was a war or something, eh?
Yeah. And then the town boss, the guy that owns the town, has a whole bunch of them, and he's very proud of them. So it felt much almost like that similar dynamic from the Aliens franchise of, like, you know, the company guy against the spunk, feisty female protagonist.
I really like the colors in the book, too. I thought the colorist did a good job with normally I don't like fluorescent-y type colors, but there are a lot used in this comic, but I found it would worked well for the desert type planet that it is.
Well, I thought they showed a lot of restraint too, even though it's fluorescent. They're not screaming off the page.
Not all. Yeah.
So maybe a muted type of tone would be a good description of it. But all in all, and the art is very, very solid, kind of just nice, clean kind of line work, and the designs are pretty clear. Like, you have a lot of aliens, which I think makes it easy in some ways for character differentiation.
Yeah.
Look again.
Copperhead from Image Comics. And Copperhead is the locality that the sheriff is assigned to. There's a mine or something there.
Uh-huh. Very good.
But, I really love the first cover, too. It's a really nice first cover.
And for those unfamiliar, the writer is particularly good at the sort of soap opera twists and turns that are reminiscent of some of my favorite old-timey comics. And quickly establishing the characters, I think that's the advantage of using a particular genre, is you quickly know who these people are, and then you can start playing with your expectations of those.
Nice. Kevin, what else is happening up there north of the border?
Picked up a couple of hardcovers here. You know, sometimes you have a comic on your list, and you're like, "Well, I'm never gonna get a chance to read this, but if I ever see it, you know, it's like, I don't know if you guys have those things. Like, it's sort of like in the '80s, you hear about these things like Straight Toasters or American Flag or Miracle Man. You're like, "Wow, I'd really like to read these," but sometimes, you know, they're just not available to you, or you would have to search too hard or too much money or whatever the situation is. So I got this Zenith from 20,000 AD, where it originally comes from, by Grant Morrison and Steve Yeowell. So I don't know if you have any, like, that's what I was seeing, if you guys have any legendary things. It's like, I want to read Miracle Man at some point too, but I'm going to wait, you know, until I get the fancy omnibus or whatever.
No, Miracle Man is the good example of that. I've been reading that along. I mean, that happened the first time while I was out of comics, so I missed it the first time around, and it hasn't been really much available since. So I've been reading those as they can't come out now. But no, I got a few of holes from that late '80s time for me.
Yeah, I think that's like the best example of something that wasn't reprinted that, you know, you might want to read.
Yeah.
So I'm like, yeah, if I waited that long, you know, I can just wait to the complete thing. So yeah, this is another one of those type of things. And I don't know when I found out about it. I try to remember, try to think of when, like, I discovered Grant Morrison type of thing. Like, I sort of know when I read his first book, but The Distinguished Competition.
Hmm.
So I sort of, like, know when I knew enough about him that I would want to read a book by him.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know how I really knew about him as a writer before that. But anyways, this is one of those books that they talk about. So it's put out by 20,000 AD. I guess this is Rebellion. Yeah. And you have I guess it's not the biggest hardcover. It's like around 120 pages, but it's like oversized, like more like magazine size.
Mm-hmm.
So like it fits in with like your Image hardcovers and stuff like that. So yeah, it gets to go on the premium shelf. At least on my shelving, that's how I organize stuff. I'm like, ooh, where are you going?
The good.
I do that too.
So yeah, it gets to hang out with all the cool kids, even though it's superheroes. But yeah, this is it also has some cool spot varnish like all over the cover, so you're sort of like feeling it up. You're like, ooh, the logo and some of the parts of the character and everything.
Okay, that's weird.
Well, you got to smell and vaunt your comics.
Well, I do smell my comics. That's true.
Exactly. It's like a pack of cards. But yeah, this is the story you know, during World War II, they start like creating superheroes and everything. And so you have Maxi Man and like the Master Man, like the British superhero and the German Nazi superhero. I guess he wouldn't be a superhero. A superhero for the German people? Supervillain? Whatever. Two country superheroes are fighting it out, and then someone drops like the atomic bomb on them.
Dope.
In Germany.
That'll show them.
Yeah, so that like kind of wipes out like that era of superheroes. So then you get to like modern day, where like there's only like one active superhero. Like they go sort of into the backstory to explain how superheroes come around again, but it's not like there's like millions of superheroes around or anything like that. So like they only have like one public superhero, and he's like some kind of entertainer, and he's like drunk, flying around drunk. You know, that type of thing, because it's like, it's not really supervillains and all that going on. But there is like these forces that are trying to bring back, this might seem familiar, the many angled ones. Ooh. From like another dimension. Like weird, creepy, multi-tentacle, eyeballed, weird entity guys. So that's basically like the running plot for a while, and then they try to get, like, once someone finds out about that, it's like trying to get the band back together. But apparently, like, all the superheroes have lost their power or disappeared. So it's like trying to convince people, like, hey, something's going on. And it's like everyone's like, no, I want to keep on drinking, or as one of them is like gotten into politics. So they have like other concerns or other things that are like more important to them. So basically, like it goes into some German stuff where they would do all these experiments on twins. So while like one of the master men is like dead, you still have the other twin. So they basically summon these forces into the other master man dude, and then he comes back and he starts, you know, trying to cause the end of the world and everything. And all these heroes are trying to come back together again. And there's like this, there's this great page turn since this is all in black and white, you can imagine, like, you turn the page and you're like, whoa! So that's what basically this whole first volume is their battle with those type of forces, and this is only the first volume, so I'm not quite sure the phase one, so I'm not sure if phase two will be, like, another attack from the same bad guys or something, or if they'll further explore the world, but I definitely want to see more of this, because this is another one of those, like, 80s superhero thing. And you might think it would be slightly cynical or something. You might have that British sense of humor, but I don't know, it's pretty straightforward for Morrison and these type of stories, but very entertaining. They also have some interludes that take place in World War II, so you get more background on some of the British heroes and stuff like that. Then they have, like, the 20,000 AD cover is reprinted in the back in full color. Nice. So, like have some Brandon McCarthy covers, some Steve Dillon. So it's kind of cool. And then a lot of sketches in the back for the different characters.
Nice.
Were these supposed to be, like, existing heroes from the real British superheroes from the 40s that they reintroduced, or did they make these up?
They could be old ones, but I think they're new ones. Like, I don't think I've heard of any of these guys. Not that I know a lot of UK guys, but it's like Voltage, Titan, The Spook, Task Force UK. Like, it could be. Like, the only thing that I...
It is something Morrison would do, if so.
Yeah. But I assume they would have more, like it would actually tell you something in here about something like that. Like, the only things I sort of remember, well, not remember, that's not the right word. Like, I think Marvel Comics and a lot of other companies sort of use the whole Masterman type of whole thing. Like, I think that's just part of the genre tropes.
Agreed.
Yeah. So I don't really recognize anything beyond something like that.
I got another one for you. From a company I never heard of before, Radco Comics.
And is it rad?
And this is something that is, I'll leave it you to determine that for yourself. This is something that is both a comic and a movie. And the movie promotions spoil the twist of the comic. And I dipped in not knowing about the movie and just checking out the comic, so I kind of enjoyed the twist, but let me set it up for you.
Snowpiercer?
No.
Battle Royale? No.
Snowpiercer's kind of expensive. I'm going to wait for it to go on sale before I pick that up.
I picked up the second volume from the library. I haven't tucked into it yet, but...
What I have for you is two issues. They're both from 2014. I also bought them digitally on Comixology and read them that way. It is the black and white tale of a vigilante type. It is a girl in a some sort of city that's a little bit run down, looks a little industrial. And the whole thing starts with her in a tub. And she's reflecting about her activities earlier in the night as a protector with a twist. And I don't mean the skateboard she rides around on, but she does. She rides around on a skateboard. She's got a cloak and a kind of a cowl, like a hood. And that kind of sets up her in that environment, and you get the twist, the catch, at the end of the first issue. And in the second issue, you get kind of a desert adventure that leaves the lead character, this vigilante type, coming upon a town, and you're not sure if it's a real town or if this is a metaphysical journey, because she was kind of starving, or the equivalent of starving in the desert, and she comes upon a town called Bad City at the end here. And it's written by a director and movie a writer named Anna Lily Amirpour, and drawn by Michael DeWeese. And this is called A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night. And it is a movie, by the same name. It was a Sundance Film Festival type movie. It's it actually is Persian language. And
yeah, they had a review of it in the Saturday or Sunday Times, most recent.
Well,
a little capsule review.
The director was on, I didn't even know he still had a late night talk show, but Carson Daly has a late night talk show. I saw that there were, I missed it. I was going to check it out because I had them on my iPad to read. But the movie is described as the first Iranian vampire Western. So that kind of gives away the twist. But I had no idea she was necessarily in Iran, but now that makes sense because it's sort of this industrial oil town on the edge, outskirts of town kind of a thing, and it seems like it's kind of a dangerous place to be at night, etc. But it's all very interesting, and the black and white art goes from very indie, just kind of telling the story, to some of the panels are really well rendered, especially some of the desert scenery and stuff, and the skull with the sand blowing off it and stuff. The image that I sent you guys, it's really cool, interesting, worth checking out. I think I don't know about the movie, but the comic so far of the two issues has me curious to see what happens when she hits Bad City.
Is that like Sin City? Like, that's a name. Once you see that city name, you're like, ooh, don't go there.
The entering Bad City sign that she comes upon on the last panel says, founded. What difference does it make? Population. Who cares?
That reminds me of city signs where it says population 30 and someone wrote down, cross it out and put zero. Or like it says, rough road for 30 years, or, you know, people playing around with street signs.
Seems like some of those people need some more civic pride.
well, they're not entirely wrong. That's the thing.
All right. Andrew, anything else?
Well, I guess I need to get off of the image tip here. I wanted to give a quick, a real one and then a super quick one. I've continued on with Pax of the Low Country, number 2, is out. For those of you, this is a self-published book with by John Dudley and Don Cardenas. I talked about number 1. And number 2 is out, so you can get them. They have their website, paxofthelowcountry.com. There's additional content there, plus, you know, information on how to secure your own copy. I'm enjoying the series, but wanted to mention, you know, there is continuity. I don't read everything in trade. But I wanted to mention Boom Studios, always a favorite. We've talked a lot about sort of the burgeoning IDW has gotten into the artist edition, and now there's other companies doing the same. Boom is doing these pen and ink versions. I don't know if you gentlemen have seen that, but you may recall we covered the book Hit, which was about the L.A. police, kind of a crime book set in the 40s or 50s, I think like late 40s, early 50s. And what this is it's a black and white reproduction of those, but it's done in that oversized artist edition style.
Cool.
And it's issues 1 and 2, and it's soft cover. So it's, I think it's like $20 in that range, but you have the full reproduction of the art. And they include the word balloons. There's no color in this version. But at the bottom inch or two of the page, they have commentary from the creatives. Like a little back and forth between, it's usually Bryce Carlson and Vanessa Del Rey. And Vanessa was the artist. I don't know if you guys remember, we talked about it. It's written by Bryce Carlson. We actually covered this first issue. But I really liked it because it's a chance to really gaze at the artwork in oversized. And because they include the word balloons, which I'm sure weren't on, it's not the pages where they have the markups and everything on them, but it is an oversized production of the art.
Right.
And I know they did this also for the book Daymen. So I saw this one at one of the shows I went to, and I was like, $20, you know, this is a pretty good deal to really get a nice look at the artwork and the process stuff.
Sure.
And, yeah, it came out in October. So I was like, if this is something, if you guys are into that, I strongly suggest it. Or maybe you didn't like the art in that one. They also did Daymen. I don't know if they're doing others. But I'm all on board with these beautiful, big, pretty art books. It's just tough finding room on they don't really fit on shelves. So I have to stack all these things like between the bookshelves and things like that.
Or horizontally on top of the bookshelf. That's what I do with the box as like the shelf extender underneath it, right? So it doesn't like so there's no gravity isn't pulling it over a ledge. I just got a big Kickstarter this week, The Little Nemo Dream Another Dream.
Oh jeez.
That's ginormous. It's 21 by like a little more than 16 inches from Locust Moon Comics Press, and it's 9 pounds, and it's got over 100 current cartoonists doing their version of or their tribute to, you know, Winsor McCay and his Little Nemo stuff. Paul Pope, Sienkiewicz, Bag, Dalrymple, Bastian, Cassidy, Allred, Ba and Moon, P. Craig Russell, J.G. Jones, Steve Bissett, heck, even Dennis Kitchen does a page in there. And I met these guys. I was a backer of the Kickstarter, and I happened to meet the guys at their table in Boston, and was talking to them some, and they were thanking me for, you know, being a contributor and all that. And then I saw a couple of the other guys and dropped the names of the other ones when I saw them in Baltimore. Because I saw them at Dennis Kitchen's table when I was talking to Kitchen. And you know who Dennis Kitchen is, right? He's the dude who did all the Rip-Off Press stuff and brought back all that, you know, Kitchen Sink Press and brought back a lot of the underground stuff from the 60s and early 70s and stuff and made them available in the 80s to skulls full of mush like myself and whatnot. But these guys had the big oversized hardcover proof of this Little Nemo Dream Another Dream book in Baltimore back in, what was it, in September, at the beginning of September. And they were showing it to Kitchen, showing him his page and how it came out and everything. And because I was there and they knew me as a backer, they like let me hang out with them and page through the thing and comment along with them as they're going through and like, oh my gosh, oh, and this page came out so great and all that. And Gearhard, the guy who did Dave Sims' backgrounds and some of the frontispieces for Cerebus, he does a page with all these animals on it. And he was in Baltimore and had the original page there on an easel. And I was able to run over to him and then say, I just saw the book and your page looks great in it. And it really does. It's talk about totally needing something to be this size to marvel at it. Every page is like a totally different style, but it's all trying to take advantage of the space and big long panels and crazy psychedelic stuff, and I can't wait to just take the months that it's going to take to pour through the thing. Telling you.
Our mind is blown now.
Telling you.
Winsor McCay's good stuff, and that's all, I'm pretty sure. That's readily available, and I think it might even be in the public domain. The Dreamkeeper, Bitfiend.
Yeah, I think it. I might have seen some of that, like on Internet Archive or something.
Yeah. So, if people are interested, they should be able to Google that up and get a little eyeful. Although Little Nemo's a bit different, but it's all the same. You know, once you see some Winsor McCay.
No, it's the Nemo.
He's most famous for the Gertie the Dinosaur.
Right.
Which everyone has probably seen that old black and white, some of the original.
But Nemo gets into all that trippy psychedelic stuff and all his like pre-Eisner exploration of like page design and stretching out panels and having stuff drag from one panel into another panel across the gutter and using the title in through the, you know, the weaving it through the rest of the. I mean, because he had a newspaper, then it would open up and it would be the whole size of the newspaper right through the fold. And he played all around with that stuff. And you know, it was all trippy dream world stuff where Nemo wakes up at the end falling out of bed or whatever. Yeah, I just love that stuff.
Rare Bit Fiend had some of that stuff, too.
I want that book and I want your goddamn pirate book, Steve.
Bastion's page.
I want them now. Oh, I'm too lazy to order them. I got to order them.
That must be expensive shipping.
I'm going to get my comic store to get it, I think. That way I don't have to worry.
Yeah, doing it through the Kickstarter, it actually ended up being pretty decent as far as the shipping angle went. That seemed to be where you got, you know, some like real some savings out of it. basically, but and to be able to make sure you had a copy and being able to contribute to it made in the first place, of course. But yeah, no, I thought it was pretty reasonable for the price of what these archive editions and stuff go for, and what they even just what their cover price is for those that even have cover prices.
All right, I don't want to waste too much of everybody's time, so I'm just going to review 14 books.
Okay, let's do it. Lightning round. Just,
on the first day of...
It's a line or two about each, that's all. So first up is Sabrina the... I almost said the Teenage Witch, but it's not called that. It's called Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, number one, which is the new Archie adult line book, which I think they're going to have another hit on their hands. I enjoyed the art a lot. It's basically just her origin story, but I think this is great that it's a totally different feel than their zombie one. Then we got Edward Scissorhands, which is by IDW. Great cover by Gabrielle Hardman. And then you open it up, and you're like, you wish he did the book, though, because it's all cartoony. And sorry, my dog's going crazy. Hold on. Okay. And basically it continues after the movie. So if you're a fan of the movie, you should definitely get that.
I think he smells Gabriel Hardman's dog.
Yeah. My dog likes to scratch into things and dig. Just a little, looks like a little Ewok.
He smells so, your dog.
Next up is Drifter by Image, number one.
Is that the Conan in modern times?
No.
No, that's the sci-fi. Never mind.
This is about a spaceship that lands on some planet, and it's pretty good. It's worth picking up, but you don't really know much about what's going on. Then we have Nailbiter number 7, which is Bendis's, Brian Michael Bendis's guest starring role, which is kind of which kind of goes because this is kind of his because Powers number 7 did that with Warren Ellis. Remember?
Yeah, right. I was gonna ask you if you've ever read the one where Warren Ellis is like running his mouth off in that issue, and then it's just like, holy jeez.
Yeah, this actually works. It didn't bug me at all that Bendis was in the book. He was just in it as himself, a comic writer looking, just researching because he wants to do a serial killer type book. Didn't really advance the story so much, though, so if you skip this issue, you would be fine for the most part. You find out one little thing, but it wouldn't really matter. Like, this did kind of bring me out of the story a bit, almost, even though it was good.
Was it decompressed, Phil? Was it true to true to Bendis's vision?
Well, the funny thing is they kind of use like panels like Bendis a bit and stuff. And
Does the word balloon cut across the spine? You're like, wait a second, am I supposed to be reading this one or that one?
Nope, but it has like the, you know, when he has all the panels and the talking heads.
Yeah.
Like it has all that. Hmm. And I only wanted to talk about it for a second, Kevin. Jesus.
We have comments on some of your books.
Okay, you're right. Next up is Justin Jordan's new book, which we've been talking about a lot. This is an Avatar book called Dark Gods, and it's just basic Avatar crap, so I was a little disappointed in it for as far because I was becoming a fan of Justin Jordan. Then to make Kevin happy, IDW's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Ghostbusters crossover.
What?
You didn't see that?
No.
It's one of those issues, the first issue, where they don't meet up till the very last page, which always disappoints me big time.
Yeah, but I guess it's all set up then.
Yeah, but it just, for me, it's a pass. Then there's the Evil Within comic by Titan Comics, which is based on a video game that just came out. It's retarded. That's a bad word. I shouldn't use that. Sorry. But it's dumb. It's basically like a comic.
Select just, next word in menu.
Like 60 pages of this comic could be done in 2 pages of a normal comic. Like it's play the video game. Don't even pick that up. I'm going to skip this next one, Zoo Hunters, because it was just so boring. Next up is Walking Dead. I kind of fell off Walking Dead because it's been kind of, I just read too much of it, and the TV show kind of brought me down. But I recently picked up the trades where it's the big war. Found it kind of boring still, wasn't too into it. But then I picked up the newest one where it jumps ahead in time. and it breathed in a new life for me for The Walking Dead, and I'm enjoying it now and picking it up in single issues. Hmm. So if you did fall off Walking Dead, maybe give that a try. Jump on again, because like I say, it I was ready to drop the comic. I did drop the comic already, so... So for me, it was kind of nice that I was into it a bit again. Still won't like the show. And then next up is Blackacre, which is a two-trade series. Post-apocalyptic type one, where a guy is kind of in the wasteland and he ends up running into like a religious tribe and has to pretend to marry a little girl just to protect her. Things like that. Amazing story, a lot of fun. But after the second trade, it was canceled, and you're left like with this amazing cliffhanger. So,
see, that was a little bit before the like current modern. I have to think of like the, you know, where Image is now. I remember picking that up for.
This was 2013.
Maybe it
was. No, sorry. It was 2001 originally. I think
2001.
Yeah,
that doesn't seem right.
My God, it's full of stars.
No, I just remember reading a book. Maybe that book.
Who published it?
Like that.
Image. It's by Duffy Bordeaux and Wendell something.
Of course it is.
Did one of those guys write Bloodshot?
I don't know. I can't even pronounce names, Kevin.
No, I think I've read the first trade of that. I think because, like, Brubaker for Action said, this is your next favorite book.
It's really good. It's really good, but the fact that they weren't able to finish, which is not their fault, it's just didn't get good sales. It just sucks because you really do. Maybe one day they will. Who knows? But
yeah, I don't know. Like, it was kind of bleak, and and I'm like, I don't know. It was another one of those. I don't want to compare. Like, I think Lazarus is sort of doing something, if I remember correctly, like what that book was doing.
I haven't read that one, so I'm not sure.
Yeah, but I don't know. Sometimes these future, the world is a horrible place stories, I'm just like, I don't really need another one of these. Like,
yeah, it's 'cause you're afraid of things. You're a big scaredy cat.
Am I?
Yes. Next up is Garth Ennis's Return to Crossed, which is where he does the origin of Crossed, how it all started. Now, it's very cryptic, so you don't really know exactly what happened, but from what I got from it is that basically God dropped all these dirty bombs in all the biggest cities in the world, and all the Crossed are horny angels that were just tired of being all cooped up in heaven. Mm. So, spoiler alert. I wasn't satisfied at all, especially because it was Garth Ennis. It was very boring.
Hmm.
Very boring. But it's Crossed, so what are you going to get? Next is Night of the Living Dead, Aftermath by David Hein, who I actually like David Hein a lot. But this was very lazy writing. He had some really cool ideas. Then the second half of the issue, it would just completely fall apart. When he should have gone an obvious way, which would have made it good, but he just... Well, it's Night of the Living Dead comics, so what did I expect? And then next up is IDW, The Other Dead, which is zombie animals. And this comic made me mad because there were quotes in it on the front and back that said, what an original idea. Why didn't anyone ever think of this before? Zombie animals has been done for years. And Obama's in this comic. So it's got a couple things against it.
I think that's what bugs me about comics when someone says, this is so innovative, and it's like they're almost, like, it honestly could be, but it's like they're just setting the comic up to fail. Like, I remember, like, a lot of situations like that. You open it up, and you're like, you're going through every page going, that's not innovative, that's not innovative, going, that's not original. It's like, why?
The funny thing is, though, about it is the Obama part is, in this comic, he actually fit in it a bit. Like, he actually... He was fighting zombie animals, but he actually, I don't know, actually didn't bug me as it would in another appearance he made in.
All right, so what's your 14th?
I skipped that one too.
All right. Anybody else got a quick hit?
I got something.
Fire away.
All right. So if you thought the other thing Which was like an oversized, crazy hardcover type of thing. I got another one that's magazine size. No spot but varnish this time, though. It's from Titan Comics. It's Void by Sean Phillips and Hendrik Hanna. So this is like an outer spacey type of deal. But it's only like 48 pages for like $10.
Drawn
like,
by Sean Phillips?
Yeah, yeah. Because I knew he like does other things. Mm-hmm. Usually you don't see those things. Like he'll do... What was that one? Was it Seven Psychopaths for Boom, that
was,
maybe?
That was Boom or IDW, one of the two.
Yeah, yeah. But I know that was another European one, and I know there's another historical one that's never came out, but it seems like in between his criminal or fatale or whatever they, you know, he has going on with Brubaker at Image, he like does these like these European like graphic novels, yeah. And you usually don't get to see them, but yeah, this. So I'm like, oh, Titans Comics is putting this, putting something out.
You don't get to see them? It's Sean Phillips. It always gets reprinted here.
I'm still waiting for others to get reprinted.
I've seen at least four or five European ones he's done.
I don't know. I'd have to check. But I'm sure there's some that haven't been reprinted.
Because he did a vampire one that ended up coming out here in single issues.
Vampire?
Yep.
I don't recall a vampire one, because I'm usually on top of that stuff. Mm-hmm. So I usually see his name and go, oh, like I usually earmark that stuff, because I'm like, even if the story's not good, it's like his artwork's there, and then if you're a big fan of his artwork, it's like, you know, how are you going to go wrong?
Yeah, and you don't see him in a lot really these days, like, because I don't read Criminal anymore, I'm tired of that.
Or Fatale, or the Fade Out.
No, I have the Fatales.
Okay. I know you weren't the biggest fan of the Fade Out. Which is still awesome.
No.
But yeah, anyways, this is just a small thing. But I'm like, it's a $10 hardcover. Yeah, it might be only 48 pages, but, you know, still. Not too bad.
That's kind of expensive for 48 pages.
Well, I'm thinking if you're going with like $4 cover price like, for like a 20-page comic.
Just make it soft cover and charge me $7. $6. Like, 48 pages.
But it probably wouldn't be. It would probably be $8.
Tooth and Nail is 48 pages.
That's rare. They're giving you a deal. They want you to come back. They go, this is a ton of story. If this doesn't sell you on the comic, well, then we don't know what to do.
$3.99 Tooth and Nail.
So I'm thinking, if it was a $4 thing, that's $8.
And then
throw it in an extra $2 because it's an oversized hardcover. That's not bad. It's not bad.
I was told there would be no math.
But anyways, this is a whole sci-fi story of like a ship that's like a prison ship, and they've been carrying a lot of prisoners and everything, and things go horribly wrong. So they're like talking about the dangers of space travel, and I just had to think of 2001 Space Odyssey, too, because there's this one panel where this guy gets into a spacesuit, and he's, like, looking outside, and now whenever I see, like, I guess it's how it's drawn. It's like whenever someone goes outside in a spacesuit, it's like that music starts playing from the movie, and you're like, don't go outside! And they're, like, trying to detach part of the ship at one point, and I'm just like, you get the like the whole Star Trek thing, you know, in the Next Generation when they're like trying to separate the saucer section from the rest of the ship, and they're like trying to convince you it's like all cool and everything, and then they spend 10 minutes on it. So I have like those type of reference points, but yeah, they also get into what happened to the ship, where it's like there's things they didn't anticipate, like a meteor storm really messes up the ship. And then people are getting killed inside of it. And they're, like, trying to figure out, like, this one guy's trying to figure out the mystery of, like, what happened. And he's like, ah, oh, man. And then they get into, like, some other space trips where, like, people went insane and stuff like that. So this one guy's like, well, this one guy's trying to kill me, so I gotta go after him and hopefully, like, escape from this crazy place and get to someplace better. But there's, like, nowhere else. There's nowhere to go. You're, like, trapped on a crazy person ship. And Phillips sort of has, like, this thing I recognize more from Sleeper, but it's not all the way through, where he would, like, have an image. It's sort of like the image behind the panels. Like, you might have the spaceship on, like, a main panel at the top of the page, and then all these other panels are, like, on top of that image intersecting, and then at the bottom of the page or on the side, you'll see the rest of the image, like, it's sort of underneath. He sort of has some of that going on, but not as much as is in Sleeper. He might just double up on the images, like, well, there'll be an image in the top, then there'll be a lot of little panels or horizontal or whatever, and then it'll sort of, like, link up with another panel at the bottom. Just something I really appreciate and really thought was cool. And, of course, you know, when I saw him in person this year, I'm like, you know that thing you did with the thing with the panels intersecting? And they're just like, I probably sound like one of those guys. He's like, yeah, I did that cool thing years ago, yes. Hmm. But anyways, I just like that type of stuff. So really cool, like if you want to get a short sci-fi story.
Nice. And thanks to Phil, that's our 21st different series covered here. So
oh, I got 10 more.
Maybe we should quit while we got Blackjack. Blackjack! We got 21.
Before Steve gets carpal tunnel typing these up.
You don't want me to do that again? We got a podcast more often.
Did you count the two where he just said, I'm going to skip that, but he still mentioned the title?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
All right, gang. Thanks for reassembling and doing this again, and we'll do it again sometime soon. Heck, I just did it, and I'm ready to do it again.
We're going to have to. We're a week behind.
I'm ready.
All right, gang. Be thankful. Go read some indie comics. Later.